A man is sent on a fool's errand trying to cash a money order. A young woman's dream of summer in France quickly sours. An adventurous couple hustle on the streets of Dakar to save up for a one-way ticket. At one and the same time funny, thought-provoking, political and personal, these stories and more were being told by the pioneering generation of independent Africa's first filmmakers. Something etched into my mind from growing up in Istanbul, Turkey, is how early I would be hauled out the door by my mother if any errands related to officialdom needed doing that day. Her attitude made complete sense for navigating Turkish bureaucracy, a convoluted day-long saga of misdirection, elusive paperwork, and surprise fees. So when I watched the 1968 film Mandabi by the Senegalese director Ousmane Sembène, it didn't matter that I wasn't Senegalese or was born decades after its release. I got it immediately. Sembène was telling a story from a different part of the world that nonetheless felt familiar. Mandabi is a Wolof word deriving from the French for a postal money order, le mandat postal. And on the surface, it's a film about the easiest way to deal with such obtuse state bureaucracy. Just don't engage. Mandabi is Sembène's second feature, and it follows an unemployed man called Ibrahim Dieng, who lives in Dakar with his two wives and children. In a Senegal newly freed from French colonial rule, Ibrahim survives off a precarious chain of debts and promises, dodging and ducking the shopkeepers and relatives who call around to extract payment. He has a stroke of luck at last. A nephew who works in Paris has sent him a large sum of money. So begins a frustrating, funny, and tragic series of events. Ibrahim's attempts to cash the money order are constantly thwarted by a maze of bureaucratic obstacles inherited from French colonialism. To get the mandabi, he needs an ID. To get an ID, he needs a birth certificate. Village-born Ibrahim doesn't have one and cannot explain his problem in French, the language of officialdom in Senegal. "Outrageous," he blusters. "Anyone at the local mosque can vouch for who I am." Ibrahim's outburst reveals much about the social, political, and economic makeup of everyday life in the post-colonial African nation-state. There is a total mismatch between what makes a citizen in the eyes of this new institution and the everyday lives of ordinary West Africans like Ibrahim. Mandabi could easily be a comedy, but Sembène wanted to do more. The working-class son of a fisherman, he grew interested in literature and politics as a dock worker and trade unionist in post-war Marseille. His first novel, Le Docker Noir, Black Docker, was published in 1956, and several other works followed. But Sembène didn't care to be applauded by the French literati. He was nearly 40 years old when in 1962 he decided to take up a filmmaking scholarship for African students in the Soviet Union. Sembène spent a year studying at the Gorky Studios in Moscow. There, he was classmates with Sarah Maldoror, who would become the first black woman to make a film in Africa. And this coincidence was no surprise. African and Asian film students were a common sight in 1960s USSR. While France and Britain were looking down on the artistic development of their former colonies, Moscow was fostering links with artists, writers, and intellectuals in newly independent African nations like Senegal. The reasons, of course, were to do with coaxing Africans into a Soviet sphere of influence as much as diplomacy or advocacy. Sembène was taught the technique of socialist realism. But in a post-Stalin era, the African students weren't forced to adopt the Soviet approach. Sembène returned to Senegal, armed with an old camera. he'd found his medium. Simban's hope was that his films would help his fellow Africans understand their own power to shape their new nations. Otherwise, just like poor Ibrahim in Mandabi, he feared the vast majority on the continent would be in for more of the same after the official end of European colonialism, exploited and impoverished. This time, though, it would be their own governments acting the middlemen as the West continued to use Africa for cheap labor and precious resources. As tragicomic as Simban's film is, it drives home the fact that the world after the end of colonialism did not look nearly as different as colonized peoples had hoped it would. The gap between the powerful and the powerless remained the same, with just a few new faces moving up in the world. In a decade that had all the appearance of a victory done and dusted over colonialism, Simban's cinema showed the demands for decolonization, for justice and redistribution in Africa, were sometimes actually pacified and derailed by the granting of nationhood. I admired Simban's artistic and political commitment to, in his own words, the Africa of the common people. But a question still bothered me. My entire adult life has featured the same party ruling my country of origin, a party that consistently declares itself the spokesperson of the common people. Maybe it was the sight of schoolchildren belting out the Turkish national anthem every Monday morning, but I've always been wary of how the common people can mean anything and anyone that serves the politics of the day. When I watch the work of another West African filmmaker and Simban's contemporary, the Malian Suleiman Cisse, I found my misgivings in his films. They're rife with the drama of authoritarian politics in the decades after Mali's independence from French colonialism, capturing the frustration of a generation facing no good choices. Military rule in Mali lasted from 1968, when General Moussa Traoré took power, until 1991, when mass protests led to multi-party elections. Cissé's 1982 film, Finye, which translates as The Wind from the Bambara language, captures this mood of dissatisfaction with a story about a bold young post-independence generation in Mali. Finye opens with the sound of the wind and an image of rippling water. A cryptic text appears on the screen as the camera pans across the treetops. Wind awakens the thoughts of men. University student Batru and her boyfriend Ba are going to be the winds of change in this tale. Not only do they and their fellow students stand up to the state, but also to their own fathers and grandfathers. Batru's father is a military governor, and Ba's grandfather, a traditional Bambara chief. Together, they embody two kinds of African authorities, secular and religious, that Cissé is questioning. In the film, student protesters suffer violent retaliation from the local military governor, whose power, Cissé suggests, has been bolstered by systems left over from French colonialism. Meanwhile, his camera glides over the natural landscape, which seems to inhabit a poetic realm beyond human sources of authority. Is Cissé embracing Bambara spirituality as a viable future? But in the climax of the film, the students are saved by the timely intervention of a civilian government. Is Cissé committing to the modern African nation-state instead? These contradictions say a lot about how far-reaching the project of decolonization can and must be. In Finye, a moral government saving the day can easily be both a criticism of the Traoré regime and an affirmation of African national sovereignty, still denied by the West in many ways. Just look at the way 14 supposedly sovereign African nations are still made to deposit half of their foreign exchange reserves into the French treasury today. On the other hand, the contradictions in Finier could be about much more than nationhood. Cissé's career came at the tail end of the first generation of filmmakers like Ousmane Sembène, but before the boom of direct-to-video film in 1990s West Africa. So just like he's in between African cinematic generations, so can his films perhaps be best understood as in between. Batrou and Ba's generation are looking for an Africa that is neither a return to their grandfather's pasts, nor whatever the West wants Africa to be. The questions of these two pioneering names of African cinema haven't lost their relevance or urgency. Is colonialism really a thing of the past? Asks Sembène. Who is the nation-state for? Asks Cissé. It may seem an unlikely place to look, but African filmmakers of this generation and beyond help us broaden our thinking when it comes to a contentious issue closer to home, decolonization. This word is now everywhere, as museums and stately homes in Britain consider how to talk about the objects they have on display, as the teaching of history in classrooms and on the university syllabus is reframed. We're told there is a culture war in the UK going on over decolonization. But I want to look at it in a different way. Having studied the films of these African filmmakers and the historical moment they represent, I find visions for transforming their societies out of colonial structures that touch upon every aspect of life. From sexuality to the economy, religion to agriculture, African intellectuals, politicians, writers, and community leaders saw decolonization as a project of many strands. As the storytelling of visionaries like Sembène and Cissé show us, it stops and starts. It requires us to address and question many things. Just like the trials their protagonists face, it's messy and complex. Decolonization, it was hoped, would bring the world into a truly post-colonial existence, forever transformed out of the structures left behind by colonialism. That's why decolonization had proponents of every race and background, from the colonized themselves to those in the West who stood with them against empire. But if I'm looking for what this idea means for people, I'll always look to cinema. Nothing translates the promises of decolonization quite like the stories of everyday life that African filmmakers were telling in the midst of all this. They didn't preach to people. They looked, and they reflected what they saw onto the silver screen. Today, as calls to decolonize are heard once again from Cape Town to Oxford, African cinema can help us understand what this means and why it is the world's largest unfinished project.